This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 12, Diaspora. Sweat poured down his body, drenching his clothes and forcing them uncomfortably against his skin as Vel shifted his coat to the other shoulder, the weight of what was bundled inside making his feet sink into the fine sand.
Why did I get saddled with your armor again?
He shot an agitated look over to the Dryad. He wasn't ready to forgive her just yet, not after she nearly bit a chunk out of his mangled arm. They had all begrudgingly agreed to work with one another to escape the arid wasteland, and while there was no outright distrust, the situation was not what one would call friendly.
Because, Undine pulled to a stop, glaring at the cyborg, we settled on you carrying my gear, and I would carry the queen. But we can switch at any time if you would like.
Vel worked his jaw back and forth, grumbling under his breath.
It's not my fault she wasn't wearing any shoes.
They had attempted to wrap her feet in cloth, but it wasn't enough. If he could feel the heat of the sand through his thick leather boots, a bit of thin fabric would offer no protection. Despite his complaints, the armor was the lighter of the two loads, and right now, he couldn't handle much more. The heat made him very aware of the pain in his arm, and his steps were growing sluggish. He was nearly tempted to have Amy dial back his pain receptors, but he couldn't bring himself to do it.
I'm sorry I didn't plan ahead for a trip through the middle of a desert!
Pyra threw up a hand in dismay.
Do you think I like being carried around like a spoiled child? No! So if the armor is too heavy for you, then loan me your shoes and I'll handle it. I'm sure Undine would be happy to carry you.
With a grunt, Vel pushed his worries to the back of his mind.
I'll settle for reaching the top of this rise.
First things first, they needed to survive. They had chosen a particularly large dune pressed up against an outcropping of stony rock and hard earth. It should give them a decent vantage point to see any civilization, and if nothing else, perhaps some shade on the far side. The constant abuse from the sun made his metal plates hot to the touch, and more than once, he was certain he caught a whiff of cooking meat.
Chance of septic shock rising. Serum levels have reached 1.5 nanograms per milliliter. Countermeasures proving insufficient.
I know!
Vel whisked away this information with a violent jerk of his hand. Between the bite and the hole in his arm, even Amy was overwhelmed by the bacterial load.
Unless you have a solution, I don't need to hear it.
Pyra exchanged a glance with her guardian before looking at the cyborg with concern.
Who are you talking to?
Nobody. Don't worry about it.
Vel hefted the coat full of armor and put on a bit of speed, pulling away from the awkward conversation. The silence stretched on until they crested the rise. Sand. Shimmering, opalescent sand all the way to the horizon. Vel cursed and tossed the gear to the ground as he scanned the immediate area. Due to the angle of the slope, there wasn't even any shade they could find shelter in. Just the heat of the day coming off in waves, creating a tempting mirage of water at the base that quickly dissipated as he looked closer.
Error!
The valley of sand beneath him wavered violently for a moment, causing Vel to stumble and fall to his knees.
Amy?
The flickering subsided, but the vision in his cybernetic eye was still off, more pixelated now and resembling a poorly rendered video game.
Apologies. Logical error detected. Diagnostics deployed.
Who is Amy?
Vel whirled around at the sound of Pyra's voice.
I told you, nobody. Now, unless you have an idea on where we are, how to get home, or where to find shelter, Stop worrying about me and focus.
Undine stepped forward to tower over him.
As to where, in the broader sense, this is the nation Uharia. And as to an idea of how to get home, we wait for night. The queen can lead us from there.
Vel raised a brow.
How?
Perry looked up at the sky, a searing blue above a sea of white.
My people are navigators, taught to follow the map hidden among the stars. They are the one constant out on the ocean. When night falls, we will have a better idea of where we are and where we need to go.
Seriously? All you needed to know was where the constellations are?
He sighed and gestured to the sand.
Draw the ones you need, and I can point them out.
It was Pyra's turn to raise a brow.
Point them out? How?
Tapping the side of his head, Vel grimaced.
Let's just say I have really good vision.
Your vision is 20/30, hardly what I would quantify as good. I, however, can detect stars using infrared, radio, and microwave frequencies.
Fine,
Vel shrugged dramatically.
Amy is the snarky little voice in my head that is actually a supercomputer, and she likes to provide me with less than helpful information at times like these. She's the one who can see the stars during the day. Happy?
Stop. You're making me blush.
The voice in your head? What?
Undine's stoic face cracked with what might pass as mild worry on anyone else.
I think you are succumbing to desert madness. That, or the blood loss is making you hear things. Perhaps we should rest here?
Vel
dropped his hands.
Just draw your damn constellations. I'll start mapping the sky.
Turning back towards the far side of the dune, Vel forced himself to his feet. He had hoped to find the kids by now, and instead, he was on the other side of the planet for all he knew. The weird pixelation of his vision was still overlaying much of the surroundings.
Amy, do you think you can even map the sky with this glitch?
Unknown. Switching vision modes. Night vision engaged.
The resulting white explosion of light felt as though it were charring his optic nerve. Vel slapped his hand over his eyes, clenching them shut.
Ah! Night vision is useless in the day!
Noted. Night vision disengaged.
Vel blinked repeatedly, trying to see through the glowing purple-green afterimage. For a moment, he thought he could see a figure down below. But as he tried to take a closer look,
infrared engaged.
More blinding colors that could not be covered by his hand flashed through Vel's mechanical eye. In the heat of the desert, his vision turned into a blanket of red with explosions of white and orange. It sent a shard of pain through his mind, and he shouted,
"In the desert? What is wrong with you?"
Ultraviolet engaged.
Colors shifted between super saturated hues and shades of gray with vibrant whites. Vel let out a growl of agony as he winced at the flashing lights.
All right.
He clutched at his head.
All right. I'm sorry for calling you snarky. You are helpful.
Thank you. That wasn't so hard, was it?
For a brief moment, his vision returned to normal, and Vel sighed at the blissful relief.
Radio wave imaging engaged.
He winced, bracing himself for something horrible. But as he cracked open his eyes, the world was bathed in black beneath a sea of rainbows in the sky. Bright, colorful dots shone over darker shades of breathtaking beauty. A foreign galaxy stretched across the entire sky like a river of flame. Vel lost himself in the spectacle. He hadn't seen anything so beautiful. At least, not since before he had died. No. He shook the painful thought from his head and pulled his gaze from the sky. Now was not the time to remember those who were gone. He blinked away the tears that welled up in his normal eye and looked around for something to distract himself. As his gaze swept down across the valley below them, he spotted movement. There again was something. But the harder he squinted, the less he saw.
Error.
Vel cried out as pain shot through his eye and into the recesses of his brain. Data began streaming across his heads-up display and in the back of his mind. Amy was cycling rapidly through the modes of vision, causing the base of the dune to flicker like a badly tuned television.
Error.
He went rigid, his mouth pulling open into a scream as Amy assaulted him from within. Vel's body was locked, immobile. He couldn't even move his eyelids.
Error.
The figure at the base of the hill flickered in and out of existence as his eyes cycled through a painful strobe light of filters. It turned towards the sound, and he could see it through the haze. Black, four legs, and upright body. But Amy had promised this wasn't the other world. Alpha could not be here.
Error.
Vel's scream stopped as the signal to his lungs turned off. His entire body went limp and he fell forward. Gravity hauled him down the embankment. End over end, he tumbled through the sand, oddly aware that he couldn't actually feel any of it, until he hit a short drop-off and found himself free of the Earth's hold for a brief moment. He landed hard on his stomach, the last remaining wisps of air rushing to leave his lungs. He was paralyzed, trapped in his own body. Amy had crashed, and all he knew was that somehow he was now face down in water at the edge of a lake.
Well, that's not good.
Atticus pushed one of his hands to his hips, careful to avoid injuring his bad wrist any further. He turned back to look at their guide with a heavy sigh.
Someone went and put this massive fissure in our path.
Varen rolled his eyes. He didn't need the kid's commentary to see that there was, indeed, a canyon running right through where the road once was. He stared over at the other side to see the worn path awaiting them, some 50 feet across. This was the only established route leading west for miles, meaning they would have to pass into untamed territories to go around. He rubbed at the scruff on his face for several moments before he looked down at his tiny mentor.
Yeah, that ain't good.
Evan gave an irritated shrug of his shoulders.
I say we return to Oxhand, get some supplies and a crew to help build a bridge. I mean, they're gonna have to fix it soon anyway, but that's gonna cause a problem for all of us.
He jabbed a thumb southward.
Looks like a storm's coming. And it wouldn't hurt to be closer to shelter when it hits.
The tall, slender figure of Captain Thorne marched up to the edge of the ravine, looking down his hooked nose into its darkened depths with a lift of a carefully sculpted brow.
We don't have time to waste lollygagging with repairs. It can't go on forever. I say we find a way around.
A chorus of winded complaints, agreements, and arguments erupted from behind them. And Varen turned to see the large group of finely dressed foreigners in various states of collapsed exhaustion by the side of the road, gulping down air for dear life as their servants employed makeshift hand fans to cool them off. Varen closed his eyes as he let out a long exhale from his nose. They had only been a traveling party for half a day, but he wasn't sure how much longer he could put up with this group of stuffy nobles and wealthy socialites. He had thought the elite of his own world were bad, but his was not a country of excess, and they simply paled in comparison to this crowd. Piper moved up towards the ravine. She had a swell of vertigo as she peered over the edge and took several hasty steps back.
I hate to say it, but I agree with the captain. We don't have time if we want to reach Vel before it's too late.
As much as I value your opinion, the adults are talking.
Thorne tucked his hands behind his back as he swiveled on his heel to face her.
Why don't you go play with a dolly or something while we discuss amongst ourselves,
Oh, it would be so easy, she thought. He was right next to the edge, and no one would miss him. Piper crossed her arms and grinned, amusing herself with the mental image, though it took all her willpower to keep it a daydream and not a reality. The prince began to sign something in protest, but Thorn cut him off.
"And honestly, your input isn't worth that much more to me. From what I gather, you are estranged within the royal family, and therefore are of little more use than a guide. A map would serve me just as well, but from what I have seen of your rustic little world so far, I would be surprised if anyone were literate enough to even write down directions. I will go around with or without you."
With a frown, Varen took a step back. The utter slap of disrespect was baffling, even for him. He swallowed hard, but dropped his hands nonetheless.
"Thank you. Now that we have established who is in charge?"
The corners of Thorn's mouth betrayed a smirk of enjoyment.
"The fastest way to your king is this road."
He pointed across the chasm.
"Which you claim leads to a city where we can hire a ferry to take us upriver. Therefore, I suggest we travel north around this ravine. If it is vast, at least we will cross closer to our final destination. That and, well, I would rather move away from the encroaching storm."
He gestured off to the south. Through the trees, they could see a deep, rumbling gray horizon moving in their direction.
"Are you an idiot?"
Piper shook her head.
"You never travel away from a storm that you can't outrun. You move against it. Otherwise, you're stuck in the wet for twice as long."
Yes, I forgot. As a street urchin, you must have navigated such issues constantly. Oh, wait, that's right. I'm the one with the experience piloting a ship in a storm. No, we go north."
Piper scowled.
"First off, you crashed last time, so not the best track record, yeah? And second, we aren't in a boat."
"No, no, no."
Atticus jumped in with a furious wave of his good arm before Thorn could reply.
"It's easy. I can make a bridge right now. See, all my robots come standard with grappling hooks."
He turned back to Unit 2 and gave him a firm nod. The machine opened a panel in its chest and a harpoon tip slid forward. He turned to face the ravine and with a dull woomph, followed by the sound of a screaming winch, the short metal spear rocketed across the chasm, exploding through a large tree with pinpoint accuracy. Unit 2 hauled back on the attached rope until it was taut, the length vibrating slightly under the growing winds.
"See? Now we can just climb across."
He moved towards the makeshift bridge with a smile and gave it a hearty pluck to testify its durability. The cries of dismay from the wealthy were immediate.
"You expect us to cross on that?
We're all going to die out here."
"Let's just go back to that town. We can convince those monsters to leave us alone, I'm sure."
"The only monsters out here are you lot."
Piper shot the floaters a look of disdain, and she pushed herself back into the middle of the others.
"Listen, if you head that way, you'll just get caught up in the storm. You can't outrun one on foot."
She turned her attention from the captain down to the tiny mercenary.
"And going back to town means we'll have spent an entire day listening to this group of crybabies for nothing. And Atticus, get down from there, now!"
She looked up to see her brother ready to scale across the fissure. Unit 2 had tied off their end and was advising Atticus on how to keep his knees bent over the rope.
"Be that as it may."
Thorn was barely containing his contempt now, a snarl threatening to curl more than the corners of his mouth.
"You are not the leader of this party. We go north."
"South. Both of yous, can it?"
Evan spoke up at last, scaling up the prince's body to stand on his shoulders so he could look them in the eyes.
"The only person that's qualified to be in charge around here is me. I'm the best tracker money can buy, and you may not like it, but the girl is white. We stand a better chance if we head south. There's more cover that way if things get too nasty."
He shook his head as he gestured in the opposite direction.
"There's nothing but flatlands up that way. You won't have anywhere to hide if it hits."
There was a murmur of worries and disagreements from the floaters, and Thorn heaved a sigh.
Then we are at an impasse, my small acquaintance.
He tucked his hands behind his back once more.
As such, I will lead my men to the north. You and your friends,
he said the word with a sneer,
can go about your business however you want, and the wealthy can choose for themselves who to follow.
Varen tried to argue, his hands digging in his bag for his slate, but the captain had already turned to his crew and barked out his orders. As they started pushing north into the thinning tree line, the group of nobles quickly followed. The prince found his confidence ebbing away and defeat settling into his core. He might not be able to stand them, but they had been his charge to keep safe. His shoulders slumped, and he let his bag fall back to his side. In silence, they watched a party of 30 sailors and several dozen floaters march off through the tall grass. It was several moments of crushing awkwardness before Piper threw her hands in the air and cried out,
"Well, good riddance, I say!"
She turned to see her brother attempting to climb back on the rope.
"Atticus, knock it off! We're not crossing the ravine by grappling hook!"
She watched him slump to his feet with a pout.
"Only an idiot would try to cross that way."
As it turns out, the only idiot was the one that chose to head towards a storm. Rain pelted them hard from all sides, thunder drowned out their shouts to one another, and the lightning threatened to burn down the very forest around them at any given moment. More unsettling, Piper thought, was the reappearance of that curious blue lightning mixed in among the bolts of white. It didn't behave like normal weather, and there was never a sound after it broke across the sky or slammed into the ground near them. And more terrifying still, it was stealing things from their surroundings just as quickly as it was depositing others. Entire trees would erupt into flames before evaporating in a burst of blue light, only to be replaced by a large boulder or circular patch of grass. There was a moment where fear and panic gripped them tight as a herd of deer came leaping out of the brush. The animals danced and dodged around them easily before a flash of blue light exploded in front of them, catching a doe off guard, and it vanished with an echoing bleat.
"Piper, I'm scared. We should head back to town."
Atticus huddled under the protective arm of his mechanical friend, struggling to stay dry. The only person she knew that was more stubborn than her was that old cyborg. She wished he were here to tell them what to do, but he wasn't. He was in danger. So she had to be the brave, stubborn idiot this time in order to save him. Piper wouldn't let herself dissolve into worry. She would be strong, not just for her brother, but for herself.
"It's all right, Atticus. We'll be okay. We just have to keep pushing through."
She shivered as a gust of wind assaulted them with more rain. Varen clapped his hands together, struggling to grab the other's attention. When they finally heard him over the torrential winds, he pointed towards a small structure tucked into the side of a hill. It was the remains of an abandoned logging cabin. The area around it had been cleared of trees for some time now, but nature was threatening to return this wooden domicile to the earth. Thick coats of moss and choking vines had kept this tiny home tucked away, hidden in the forest. Piper looked over at the darkened windows and the front door hanging slightly off its hinges. The entire thing screamed, "Haunted!" And a pull in her gut told her, no way, even in a storm like this.
No offense, Gramps, but I'm not setting foot inside that thing.
Another shudder ran down her spine that she was certain had nothing to do with the chill in the air.
I don't fancy being murdered in my sleep.
Pulling his wet bangs out of his face, Varen let out a silent growl before gesturing wildly to their surroundings. When she just offered him a blank stare in return, he spun and stomped off towards the structure.
Suit yourself, missy, but I'm going with him. I don't want to drown out here.
Evan moved to the edge of the clearing, looking around. It was useless to spot any tracks in this weather, but he didn't see any immediate signs of large, hungry animals taking refuge in the cabin. He scurried across the open woods, dodging large puddles and leaping onto the crooked steps. His foot nearly sank through a rotted plank, but he rolled onto the porch and pushed open the door. Pressing his body flat against the wall, Evan carefully peered inside. While it was dark, the smell of mildew and earth told him it was likely uninhabited. He turned to signal the others, and instead was nearly bowled over in their haste to get inside. He let out a small squeak of surprise as he was plucked off the ground by tiny mechanical hands as Unit 2 rolled his way through the door. Piper scrubbed at her scalp with vigor, attempting to shake out the excess water.
All right, so at least we didn't die outright.
She struggled to take in the room they were all huddled in. It was too dark to see much. She was able to catch glimpses when the bright blue flashes erupted in the sky outside, illuminating their surroundings for only a brief moment. She caught sight of a dusty hearth and a stack of logs nearby. She turned in the direction she hoped her brother's machine was and said,
"Unit 2, give me a hand, will ya?"
She felt a weight press into her outstretched hands and the rough texture of a log on her fingers. She tossed it into the fireplace. She felt around, realizing the dry stone beneath was bare of any twigs or other fire-starting material. Her mechanical hand came across a small box filled with dry tinder, and she smiled, grabbing a handful to toss in with the logs. She stood, looking at her work with strained effort.
"Now I'll just need something to light it with."
There was a spark that gave birth to a small flame, and Piper took the lengthy match that Unit 2 held out towards her. She bent over and convinced the cinders to take hold in the pile of tinder. Blowing on it, it took that little flame no time at all to erupt within the dry wood, and soon the room was filled with the pleasant glow of a robust fire. She sighed, a swelling of pride filling her as a warmth returned to her fingers. This woodland survival stuff was a breeze, she thought. Piper straightened up and turned to face her party.
"Thank you for your help, Unit 2.
Her words, however grateful they were, died in her mouth at the look of pure terror on the others' faces. Realizing too late that her brother's machine was still near the door and the match had been handed to her from her left, she slowly spun around. There, sitting at a makeshift table and coaxing his own flame into a dusty oil lantern, was a man. Wild would have been an apt word to describe him, for the lack of anything better. His face was hidden beneath bushy lengths of auburn hair that lined his jaw, and a tangled mess hung low over his eyes that did little to hide the sparkle within. He cracked a toothy grin, displaying animal-like teeth at her as he replied,
"You're welcome."
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
"We don't have time to waste lollygagging with repairs, and I'm tired. I can't go on forever, let's just go around."
"I hate to say it, and for the record, I think he's a pompous idiot, but I agree with the captain. We need to go around."
"As much as I value your opinion, blah, 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 go play with a dolly, blah, blah."
"You know what? You're so good at flying, why don't you start flapping your arms?"
"Flapping my... why would I..."
"I should have listened to you."
Piper?
Huh?
You were doing that scary laugh thing again. Are you okay?
Of course. I was just, thinking of something funny.
"Oh, right. If you're sure. I'm gonna go walk with Prince Varen then. I want to see if he'd like to read my Dragon Quest Chronicles, being a prince and all."
"Yep, don't worry about me. Totally not pretending to push Thorn to his death. Yep."
"Stop flapping your arms. What was I thinking?"